Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Whether you're watching that on YouTube or out on the Facebook, we are still at AM 1570. Set a spot on your dial, especially if you're in the Baltimore area. You can listen from anywhere in the world at Baltimore Positive on the mobile device. We are taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on the road. We're going to be at Fadley's every Friday that the Orioles play. We're going to be there live from 2 to 5. I will have Pac-Mans to give away. They're not going to be scratched off in second chances like this. They're going to be legit beginning on Friday. Luke Jones is going to join us from 2 until 3 each and every Friday live. And then we'll have other guests doing a little Baltimore Positive. We got political stuff, musicians coming by, old buddies. It's been a hell of a month, month and a half in a lot of different ways. I'm going to preface this by saying I've had a lot of favorite segments this month. I mean, the Charles Steinberg piece, legendary, talking to people like John Eisenberg about Oriole history. And I'm wearing my Curio and Foreign Daughter Oriole shirt. There's a lot of people in my life that has sort of come back to me in images in recent times, with Peter Angelos's passing, the passing of the franchise, and the 25th anniversary of what I've done here. And I had a whole life before doing sports radio that some older friends and some, Dundalk friends and people that knew me back in the day, but I'm doing this 25th anniversary documentary with my dear friend Greg Landry, who's been in my life a long time. His father-in-law was like an uncle to me. And we started putting the documentary together in February, and it's gotten a lot more unwieldy and windy in a lot of ways. And Greg said to me, who's going to be the narrator? And I said, you're Blue Rock Productions and Towson Transfer. You got a great voice commercials. He's like, No. You can do better than me. You need to go home, pray, Greg. So go and pray and think about who you're going to get. Cause like you got people that would do this for you because they love you. And I'm like, okay, let me think. I said, nobody loves me, but I'll think about it. So I immediately started thinking about if I died and somebody came back and I don't know, some George Clooney played my role or Eric Estrada, Donny Osmond came back and played my life story. Who would I want to tell it? And what would the narration be? And I've seen so many awesome rock docs, including like I saw the Wham one recently and other rock docs. And 20 years ago, I'm in White Marsh watching VH1. And it's like a rock doc on like Sheryl Crow or something. And I hear this voice coming through. And at the end of it, it said, narrated by Keith Brewer. And I'm like, whoa. It's only one Keith other than, you know, Keith. There's only one other Keith I know, and that's Keith Brewer, and he was in the Ravens, and I once was entertained in his one bedroom, a little apartment downtown, four blocks in the Baltimore Sun, when he was in a band called Company of Wolves. My ship is on its way. And I said, that Keith Brewer, that voice, and all these years later, I'd have never had a conversation with Keith Brewer about his narration, about the work he's done. But I said, I want Keith Brewer to be my narrator if I do this. And it was my first call and everything else that fell into place. Gina Schock, John Allen, Ray Bachman, Mickey Coachella, Mike Brillhart, who are all a part of No One Listens, Everyone Hears. But once Keith signed up, I said, we got us ourselves a documentary. So, Keith, I love you. Thanks for coming on. I mean, we got a long history. I have props. You remember this one? I'm holding props here for you now. Did I do a decent enough job of introducing you as anything other than he's the guy from the Ravens in the band, and they're playing at this Cavern Club, Big Falls thing, and Rob and Raised on the Radio. So, like, other than that, but, like, I know you in a whole different, like, light and love, and I saw you at the Kix concert in September, and
that's right.
You were literally my first reach about 3 weeks ago. It was like St. Patrick's Day, and you're like, I'm really busy, it'll take me 5 minutes, and you turned it around, and it sounds like you did it in one take, man. Dude, I love you. That's all I can say, man.
It was a perfect example of your. It's like you wrote it like you speak, you know. You can get 1,000 words in a minute. It's like it was just when there were some long sentences in there, bro.
Gina Schock made me keenly aware. So the funniest thing is I started thinking about who could tell my story in a credible way in Baltimore voices and friends of mine that care enough and love me enough to tell it in the kind of way that would be cool. And I went to over to Gina's place to, for her to record, and her dogs are barking, her friends are there laughing at her. They're going out to lunch at Costas, and I'm there, and I gave it to her, and I had to edit it on a plane going down to spring training. And I'm in the plane, and I got my headset on, I'm listening to it. And all she did was curse in her Dundalk accent. Like, the outtakes reminded me of me doing radio 25 years ago when you give me a script that sucked and I read it and stumbled over it as the radio voice guy. Man, there's nothing that's worse than a bad script. So I really apologize. Now I'm hanging my head.
That wasn't well, a bad
you made
script.
Chicken salad out of it. You made chicken salad out of it, you know?
That wasn't a bad script at all. It was well written. It was just it was long sentences, man.
Listen,
which is really funny because it was more conversational. You know, the way I did it was I was trying to be well, you judge. But
it was like the minute you sent it over, I teared up and I'm like, this is really nice that all you are helping me. And but the Gina outtakes, every time she said F, and I'm like, oh, man, the outtakes are just the best when you screw up. And I will say this. I've written a couple of books. I wrote a book on Peter Angelos, and I narrated it. And it was the first time I had ever sat and read my own writing. You know, my dad used to read out loud to me when I was a boy all the time. Like, I love when my dad read to me. Even, like, my dad read The Bronx Zoo to me, Sparky Lott. Like, my dad read books out loud because we experienced it together. It was better than reading it alone. I was a good reader. But like, I never knew how much water I was going to have to consume and how much I would pee then to read anything. Because I read commercials and I'm off the top of my head, I can do commercials, right? And I've done scripting and whatever. But reading the Peter Principles when I went to read it aloud to put it on the radio, because I thought, I wrote this cool book, I want to put it on the radio. And this is even really before books on tape became like the thing or whatever. Tell everybody what you do. Because when I Googled you to see if A, I could afford you, B, if I could find you, C, if, what else had you done? Because you did this VH1 thing. You do books by like Danielle Steele and James Patterson, who was on my show last year, with Mike Lupica. Like, you do really serious voice work that I don't think everybody knows about. John Allen didn't really know a whole lot about it.
Well, it's funny because every once in a while, I mean, I've been doing it for 20 years, but every once in a while, somebody will discover that I'm the same guy, and they'll look me up on Facebook, which is what we do now. They'll look me up on Instagram or something, and I'll get this. I just got one the other day. It said, "You the guy that does what did he say? Are you the guy that reads books?" I said, and I was like, "Well, I do narrate books, so yeah, I guess I am." And he said, "Man, you know, he they don't contact me to you know give me a lot of crap. They usually just contact me to say, hey man, I really like," and it's the writing, you know, it's the writing first. I mean, David Baldacci is like Sandy Brown. I love reading Sandy Brown's, and then I just have to bring that to life, as you know, just like your script. So I've done I don't know, you can look online. I've done about 40 over the years. And it started out doing like Danielle Steele 20 years ago, which was really funny because Danielle Steele is one of these people who just writes irritating romance. I'm sure you're not going to be watching this, Danielle, and I don't really care. But anyway, it was
he's really good at reading it, Danielle. Really, good at reading it.
Danielle, you know, God bless her, man. She's made a whole career out of it. And of course, she's had TV movies and stuff for years and years. And they don't edit her anymore. It's in her contract. They do not edit her. So if it's written wrong or incorrect or just awkward, I had to read it to make it sound right, but I had to keep it word for word verbatim, right? So that was a really good way to break into this business.
There's a lot of editing in that. I mean, do they come back and have you? So you read a book or a chapter?
Yeah, yeah. What I'm doing,
they come back and they're like, "We want you to say this with this, this dissonance or this," right?
Because you've got a producer there. I mean, I used to do it in big studios in New York. Now I do it in my studio, and they sometimes send me a producer over Skype, or sometimes I'm just on my own and I just punch and roll, you know.
Yeah.
But But when we, especially when we were in the studios in New York, those are completely anechoic. You know, like you, if your stomach growls, if you fart, if you anything, if your neck makes noise, like your
You
digestive
wouldn't want to
system.
wear a ring because you might hit something
Oh,
with it, right?
exactly. I've
Yeah.
been asked, please take your rings off. Like I'm just doing this, and you know, I don't think anybody can hear that, but. So yeah, that's a little tedious, and yeah, they do edit a lot, but that's awesome to have an engineer that's, you know, that the publishing company says, well, you just read it. If you fuck up, if you screw
Yeah.
up, you'll just do it over. Just do it over. We're not going to stop. We're not going to stop. We're just going to keep rolling. And then they just go back and cut it up.
Right on.
That's so wonderful as it compared to punch and roll at home, you know.
And I mean, and we all have GarageBand now and the ability to do this. And I think anybody who's a musician who sort of toiled away waiting for somebody else to do something else, that's how musicians became producers, right? I mean, literally, I need to get it done. I'm not gonna have it sit over there. And you know, for me, I'm working with Greg Landry on this video documentary, and there's so many elements to it. From a video photo part of it that I understand, even the writing part, but the writing of long sentences, and I heard it in your voice. So it is funny, like when I found out you were going to read for me, and when Mickey Coachella agreed to read for me, and John Allen and Gina, I started really writing it to hear it in their voice. And I don't know that I've ever done that in my life. It's almost like being a TV writer, like writing for a character and you know what you would say. And it just became a completely, it's been fun for me. I've written books. I've done a lot of things. I've never done this, and certainly not where I'm the topic of the topicality. And also as a catching up with my audience. I meet people every day that don't know I have a radio station. They see me on Facebook. They hear me here. They see me on YouTube. They know me from the neighborhood. They remember me from rock and roll, or like, I don't know how you think you know me. I think I know how I think I know you, which was Company Wolves was out. You had a publicist. I knew of the Ravens, but it wasn't of that. It was a little before my time. Even like Crack the Sky, both of you were little. I wasn't old enough to get into the clubs in 80, 81, 82. I knew about Raised on the Radio, heard on 98 Rock, knew you guys were sort of the local legend guys and had opened some shows and whatnot. But all of a sudden, I'm in your living room. And you're talking about your band and Company Wolves, and that's, I met you as sort of this Cameron Crowe. I must have been 17, 18 years old sitting on your couch. You must have been thinking, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah,
And here we are 40 years later.
what was the situation? Was that Eager Street, I think? Or was
You had a
it
Chase Street, maybe Mount Vernon area.
Madison? Remember Madison, Madeline Scarpula, that used
It
to
was
work at
Madeline.
Madeline. That was Madeline's apartment that she wasn't using anymore, and I needed a place to
It was
crash.
Matt. It's exactly what it was. Madeline. I love Madeline.
And
Yes.
I stayed there for about a year. I loved that little apartment. It was awesome.
We sat in there late one night. It was midnight with a beer, and you were telling me about the band. I probably have it on tape. I probably had, because I probably rolled tape that night
Right, but
in a
what were
tape
you
player.
doing there?
I was
And we were.
writing for the Baltimore Evening Sun. I was the
Oh,
music critic. And we were promoting Company Wolves. You were coming out, your first album, My Ship, and you know, like all that was happening at that point for you. And I wrote about you, and then you reached to me years later when you the Ravens came to town, 1996. You guys played, you reunited, and you played in Harbor Place, literally in the pavilion the night before we played the Raiders. So late August 30th of 96, you played a concert on that Friday night, and then you put together this Raven Maniac song, and you asked me to come down and sing in a studio, and I had never done
Oh
anything
yeah,
like
I just noticed you were on the credits there. I was looking at the
that.
credits because you know that's come up. Actually, SI got a hold of us, of Rob and me, about a month ago, and had the Ravens won, I think we would have had an article come out because
Dude,
this
this
guy was like.
song is a great song that
And I
you
had to pull
wrote.
that out and look at the credits, and I was like, "Oh yeah, oh wow, I forgot I invited a lot of you."
I have no, you reached to me. I guess you thought if I sang on the song, I put you on the show and it would be good
So when
promotion,
you
but
had,
it was great. It was fun. I can actually hear my voice in the back. I mean, I literally, like,
and
when I listen to it, I hear, and I remembered it being so much fun.
it was.
To just be called in. It was like a We Are the World session. It was like I came in, I put headsets on. You're like, sing it more, sing it louder, sing it different. I did. And I hugged you and I left. It was awesome.
That was the first time that the Ravens had recorded in years. You know, like since then, we've re-recorded some of our old stuff. But that, we had all gone out doing our solo stuff. I think some of the guys were doing Never Never. Rob and I were doing our solo. And I wrote this song with Dave Woodworth. And, you know, just as the Ravens were coming to Baltimore, and I was like, oh, this is perfect timing. And so I asked all the original Ravens. So it's all them. Like, that's our first recording since the old days, which was kind of cool. It's cool for a lot of number of reasons.
Well, the recording studio was like right by the penitentiary, sort of like Madison, you know, close to the Baltimore Sun, close to all that stuff. And I remember it was like a garage like thing. It was awesome.
It was Oz Studios. And I think it was eventually bought up by a ball player. I can't remember whom, to do like rap and stuff like they, but they, we did a bunch of records in there and a couple great producers and great engineers, but yeah, it was right over there off of 83.
Yeah. Keith Brewer is our guest. I am always a Raven maniac and a Ravens maniac and a Rob Fahey maniac and a Company Wolves maniac. And I saw you at the Kix goodbye show when you were sitting literally in front of me and Ray Bachman. And, you know, Gene Parker loves me and got me really good tickets with the band tickets. And I didn't bother Steve. I didn't bother even John Allen, who opened. And I didn't bother anybody, but I bothered Gene. And she sits me with all the rock stars. And Ray Bachman's next to me. His eyes are bald. He couldn't believe how great the seats were. He's so appreciative. He still hadn't paid me for the damn tickets, Ray. But he did read the documentary, so I think we might be flush. I probably owe you more than that. But nonetheless, he elbows me. He's like, who's that guy? It's like, you were right in front of my wife and where my left knee was. And I looked and I couldn't catch the front of you. Then you turned and I'm like, that's Keith Brewer. And I gave you a hug and we said hello, but the show was, what did you make of that as a guy who was in a band that mattered, that still matters, and you're doing things and God bless you. You got your voice work and you do well. And I see you're out with different acts and bands being relevant and doing all that. That was one of the really beautiful nights, and to spend it with you and John and people I knew and loved and so many people there, that was a beautiful Baltimore music night.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and my wife's a big fan and she wanted to go, so we got those tickets. But you know, I've seen Kix so many times and played with Kix so many times over the years. I'm sure John probably said the same thing. A lot of us say the same thing, like, was it the best Kix show I ever saw? I can't say that. The production was awesome and over the top, you know, and I felt like Steve was just saving it up until Cold Shower. And once he hit that note on Cold Shower, I could see, like, because I know Steve, and I could see, like, he was like, oh, shoot, got through that. All right, now I'm going to let it rip. After that, you might notice that, like, he went a lot stronger after that. But I just thought everything went as planned. There was no mess ups. You know, it was like when you're trying to create something like a farewell concert, which has been years since I did that. You know, you
the
have
first
to plan
one, right? Just the
every
first
little
one.
Thing. Oh, I've done a lot of farewell.
Not again. Not again.
Stop calling them farewell concerts after a while.
Well, I mean, and I guess that's what made me reach you. We're Facebook friends. I reached you to do this beautiful turn on my dock, and you have. And if anybody, I had John over at Costas, and I tried to emulate you, and I went, he wasn't born Nasty Nestor. So nonetheless, it was kind of fun. But I reached to you and you did this beautiful turn for me. And now you're showing up on my Facebook pages. We sort of realized the algorithm. Give me the Cavern story, the Liverpool story, because I've seen bits and pieces. I'm friends with both of you in and out. The Beatles thing, I think we all have that. I've never been to Liverpool. I've had an opportunity. I haven't gone. Tell me what you're doing up the road here next week on the 19th, because I want to come out and participate. Oh. I haven't seen you guys play in a long time. I owe you some love, if nothing else, promoted, whatever. But I want to come and experience
it. I hope you show up. Yeah,
I love you guys, man.
That was actually like a cool little story. Like I had gone over there with Barley Juice. Barley Juice has done a couple of Ireland tours and brought people. And we played the Cavern Pub, which is across a street, like Matthews Street is where that cavern is, a very famous street. And we had played the Cavern Pub. And I said, oh, wouldn't it be cool to get the Ravens over here? Man, we had the whole trip scheduled out. We were going to play the Troubadour in London. We were going to go on this big rock tour. We had a guide who's since retired. And then COVID hit and the whole thing got blown to bits and everybody had to, the travel agency had to get everybody their money back, which was not a simple feat. So anyway, I was disgusted and it took me years to get up the courage. And then about a year and a half ago, I said, all right, you know what? I'm going to do this, but I'm going to do it myself. Cause to get the whole band, the Ravens over there was just part of the hassle. It was really a hassle because for every free person on the tour, you have to bring this many people in. And so I sent out a message to our Ravens thread, which we've had for years. That's how we communicate. And I said, guys, I just want to let you know, I'm going to be advertising this trip, but I'm just doing it myself because it's just too much hassle. I can't do it again. And I don't think anybody cared except Rob caught up with me like 2 days later. He goes, you going to do that England trip? And I said, yeah. He goes, I want to go. And I turned to Beth and I was like, you know, if anybody's going to go, it will be perfect for him because he and I wrote all the songs. Like, you know, we already got what we're going to do. So,
Lennon and McCartney, if it were.
We recruited enough people and we recruited a great gang of people who, if you come to the show, they'll probably half of them be there. And we had a great time. We did a whole London tour of rock haunts. We went to Eel Pie Island and Abbey Road and, you know, all that stuff. And then we took a bus and went up to Liverpool and they put us in the cavern. And there's two stages in the cavern because it's been rebuilt a couple times down there. And
well,
oddly,
60 years, right? Literally.
Right. And oddly enough, up until about 20, 25 years ago, nobody really commercialized on it. So you could go over there and it was the same.
Right.
You know? And then, so finally I walked in, there's a whole new back room and I immediately like just went because the original stage is roped off, as you can see in the video, which is on YouTube. And I went to the back, not expecting to be able to play on the original stage. And then the owner came down and said, you know, main stage. And I said to Rob, I said, we're playing on the Beatles stage. We're playing on the main stage.
Nice.
And he was, really? Really? So it was, you know, it was fast and furious. We did four songs, two songs by me, two songs by him. And, you know, it was just, and everybody took pictures and videos and it was just a great time, you know, and everybody signed the wall. And, you know.
Oh, nice.
And then I got off the stage just to end the story. I got off the stage and there's these two old ladies like sitting, I say old. All right, I'm 70, so okay. So disclaimer.
They're at least 71.
These two ladies that are maybe a couple years older than me sitting on the side at one of the little tables. And I went up and I came over and I said, hey, do you come here a lot? Are you from? Oh yeah, we're from Liverpool, yeah. We were here when the Beatles were playing back then. I fancied George. And she just started talking. I was like, Jesus. You just go right into it. You just go right back in history. Well, next year I'm playing with Company of Wolves in Hamburg, so I'm thinking like, okay, let's go find out where the Star Club was.
You're hitting some German spots. Nice.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, one day I'll make it to Berlin and it trail the ghost of David Bowie. Keith Brewer is here. He will be there on our 25th documentary, 25th anniversary documentary. No one listens. Everyone hears. It's a story of my life. I get no respect, I tell you. Keith has put the band back together. So this show is the 19th. It's at Big Falls Inn, which is right over Gunpowder area. You can just Google Big Falls Inn or go to the Ravens Facebook page. It is 6 to 10. It's on Philadelphia Road, right? It's White Marsh, basically, just right up the road. I've always seen they do pit beef and stuff there. I hear they have good food. I have literally never been there. So this is another great reason for me to go. It's near my place. So it is the 19th from 6 until 10. Hope to see your face in a place. So you'll
just
be doing
Rob,
beef songs? Or what are we doing?
It's just Rob and myself. Like, you know, we jammed on the bus over there. We jammed in the hotel rooms and we jammed outside by the public toilets in London. And And, you know, the group that we took were so fantastic and supportive. And we said, and Rob turned to me and he says, hey, we should do this again, like back home. And I'm like, of course. And I don't know why we never have, but he and I have never appeared as a duo.
What?
No, we never have. It's always
hold on. You made your debut in a Cavern Club? What?
Kind of, yeah.
Kinda, did you do a Beatles song there or just Raven songs?
No, you know what? There's so many people that come in there and do Beatles songs, and we were like, "Now we're not doing
oh,
that."
Oh, wow, that's the deal. People go in there and do a Beatles song. Okay, I get
oh
it.
Yeah, there's guys that sound just like. I mean, there's impersonators, and if they have a 24/7 feed, you could go on the Cavern Club or whatever it is right now. And I noticed that my publishing sales went up just from playing like Company Wolves Call of the Wild or Raised on the Radio. Like it's enough ratio of people saw that on the Cavern feed that my sales went up the next month. And I said to Rob, I said, watch this, you know,
we got to go back.
I know.
Finance the next trip.
But I mean, you know, all these guys that go in there and play Beatles songs, like they're not selling anything.
Right.
So they don't even know this. They don't
realize
this. It's just a gig. It's just a thing for them.
Right. Well, I mean, and there's a titillation to doing it, which is the reason you did it to begin with. And now you're doing it for the big payday over at Big Falls. But more than that, just put the thing back together. So you will do Beatles song. What will you be doing?
I think we'll do a few Beatles songs. He sent me a set list of stuff. I mean, basically, this is just Rob's been taking somebody with him for the last 5 or 6 months, you know, to help him sing and play on his solo gigs. And I said, well, let me do that, you know. So we picked a day because the next day, which is not promoted, the next day I'm playing bagpipes there at Big Falls for the Fallen Bikers thing. I've been doing that for about 5 years.
You're a bagpipe player?
Yeah.
What else do you play that I don't know about? Like, what else? I mean, you're a narrator, and I got people that have known you forever that don't know that. A documentarian. Even when someone writes poorly constructed long sentences, you still make chicken salad out of it. But, I mean, from the band work and Company Wolves, you mentioned them as an active thing. Like, we're doing this. What? Barley Juice? I mean, I see that. Like, what else are you doing? And you don't even live in Baltimore anymore, right? I mean,
no.
Tell me the tale of how you wound up in Filthy.
I actually, by way of New York, I mean, I moved out of Baltimore when the Ravens, officially broke up in 1986 and moved to Baltimore and, you know, made my way there, kind of started all over again. That's where, I put together Company of Wolves and then we did that trip. And when I met my previous wife, who we had, the one I had children with, she was working for the record label. She was working for Polygram Mercury. And we decided we didn't want to have kids in the city. And this was about 1992. So we moved back very, very briefly back down to, Finksburg area, Westminster area. My father had a house there and we sold that and we moved here because she was from Pottstown. I was from Baltimore. I was still working in New York. So I was kind of like, right in the middle here, didn't know anybody. And now I've been here for 30 years.
Well, there's a hell of a music scene in Philly too, right? Amongst people too,
there's
right?
There's a great music scene. And some of them I remember, like the Hooter guys are still around. Some of them.
Tommy Conwell's a great buddy of mine.
Tommy's still around. Yeah. And I go out and I see him once in a while. And I'm like,
See, now that I know that, I come up to Philly and see Tommy. We're coming up in June. He's doing a festival over in Wayne. And Tommy does the show once or twice a year, very humbly. And I have to rope him. I'll do 5 minutes and 30 minutes in. He's laughing and telling stories and bagging on the Sixers and the Eagles and whatnot. But, man, I there is a support network. You mentioned you're a very young 70 at this point. But, you know, once you've been doing this a long time, your fan base, how you relate to them, what you're doing, keeping it interesting even for yourself. It sounds to me like you and Rob will be a really interesting night because – I ain't never seen that before. I mean, I literally thought you must have done this over the course of time where the two of you do a little duet.
I think he's a little surprised how much my promo person is blowing it up on social media. Because, I mean, he promotes his gigs every week, you know. And I haven't asked him this quite, you know, like straight out. But I think he's probably like, oh, shit, man, we better put some stuff together.
We better be good.
Right. Because people are coming out like thinking it's a big deal. I mean, it is a big deal. It'll be fun as hell, but I don't want to get too serious about it because what we did over there was just on the.
We're not going to take it. Listen, as someone who loves you and has been a fan of both of you, and I've seen Rob a million times, I don't see you play as much. I stumble into Rob because, like, opening day, he's playing every year. Right, so I at least see him then, usually. I didn't see him this year, but, you know, and he's always out, and I see him on Facebook and whatnot. And we have a lot of mutual friends. He's been in the studio. He always offers to come out for the anniversary and this and that to play Raised on the Radio, which we played on the radio station here for years and years and years. But, you know, it is a beautiful thing. I mentioned Tommy. You mentioned the Hooters. I mentioned John Allen, Stone Horses. We mentioned Kicks. Just Mitch Allen's name came up yesterday because John was around. Just how nice the community has been music-wise. I talked about Gina Schock being involved in what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. She went out to L.A. 40 years ago. She's back here a whole lot now, right, and put a little band together that I helped her out a little bit with. It's just – it's a beautiful community all these years later. You know, you talk about athletes sticking together, these people sticking together. I think, you know, Baltimore, Maryland musicians and people, it's been a really nice fraternity. And I guess that's why my heart for that Kicks concert, after all they've been through and issues with health and different things, that, you know, we talked about Brian Jack. I mean, John and I got a little sappy, got a little teary eyed about Brian, but just how nice it is that you guys get to play and we can come out and enjoy it. So don't take it for granted, and you guys don't have to take it too seriously. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah. I think it is just is what it is. You know,
is that all you're giving me? All right. See,
you get up and you automatically know how to do something. My wife always asks me about this stuff. Cause I'll hear stuff in music and I'll go, no, that goes now. See, I heard that when I was three and I thought it was, and my wife goes like, how do you, like, she's seen me write songs in an afternoon and record them that night. And she goes, and I said, but you know, a carpenter gets up and looks at something and says, knows exactly how that was put together. A mathematician knows exactly, you know, and like, it's like, you just know what you know. And we've always known it. And I think that Baltimore musicians, as opposed to a number of other cities, you know, New York is very serious. New York has a cream of the crop up there that I was lucky to play with on jingles and stuff like that. But they take it very seriously, and it takes a little element out of it when you're putting the money on top of the quality, you know. And I think that's
also the relationship too. You know, things like Hammerjacks and things like the Marble Bar and these places that are iconic to all of us. It's where people gathered, and you look up and 30 years later, it's where your life and your friendships have taken you.
Yeah. And they're supportive of each other because many of them never came out and should have, you know, many of them never got any farther than Baltimore, or maybe for a stint like myself. I've been out and in, you know, and I think everybody supports that. Everybody appreciates each other, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Keith Brewer's here from the Ravens. I got my Raven Maniac of Barley Juice, of the Big Falls next week, but not too much pressure, but go and see him.
No
Rob's
pressure.
Out. No pressure. Hey, so the you know, the fact that I reached to you and you were the first, literally the first voice I thought of somebody I knew who could, it would sound the way I wanted it to sound. And listen, I have a lot of people on my timeline that do voice work. How did you get into that? Because my wife has said over the course of time, like, you could do that. And I'm like, and then I hear somebody like you do it. And I'm like, no, I could do it in the Baltimore accent. I could do it poorly for free with some sips of water. And if they really wanted to hear my lousy voice, great. But then, like, you've honed this. But I heard you on VH1. When did that? Was that 2001, 2003? Like that?
That was, yeah, maybe even earlier, the 90s. I did that show before there were rock stars. I did that show about 2 years, maybe.
A lot of episodes, though, right?
Like, yeah, we did about 45 episodes. Yeah.
And who were they of? Like, give me a five names of who you read those pieces for.
You mean the rock stars?
Yeah. Who were the rock stars that they?
They had five or six every week. I mean, it was everybody. It was. I have a lot of them here. I have,
but it was like their high school picture and their story and where they came from.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in those days it was like Kid Rock, and they went from Madonna, like who was Eddie Vedder. They would find these things, people started sending stuff in, of course, once the show became a hit. and they had so much background on people. And
how did you get that gig?
I had an agent. I mean, I was doing.
Had you started to read things out loud to practice?
No, I was doing a lot of voiceovers for commercials at the time to sustain my family,
right.
And that was really good union money. And then every once in a while, the promo person in my agency would say, like, you know, we want to do this show, we want to promote this show. I got you a gig. I worked at NBC for a while. I did I think it was Good Morning America. Every morning, that was my voice that brought you on. I did a lot of stuff that I never told anybody what I was doing because I was just doing it. And out of that, every once in a while, I'd go over to the VH1 studios and we'd do a promo for an album, you know, or something. And then they called me for this show. So I kind of was already known.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not easy work and it's not normal. And it wasn't your first line of.
Well, you know, I think they liked that I sounded sarcastic. And I lost a lot of jobs because of that, because I have just weird thing like, well, let's look at little David, you know, whatever. And it just sounded, you know, I mean, I lost a lot of jobs because of that, because I sounded too sarcastic, but it's just was natural.
So that's a perfect voice for my narration.
For that show. Oh, yeah. Hopefully no one will pick that out of your model of your.
You know what? When I think of this as a guy who's owned a radio station for 25 years and you work on branding and whether you're Jack Radio or Jill Radio or you're the mm-hmm. Bay or you're the with the Z or whatever the hell, the Froggy, whatever it would be. Jack Radio, who I don't know who that voice is, but the whole thing is to be a dick, basically. Like, right,
oh, yeah.
The whole
oh, yeah.
voice is just to be the biggest jerk you could possibly be. And I'm thinking, that ain't the Wolfman Jack, the kind of, you know. And certainly from my standpoint
right.
of even writing a documentary about how I exist as a radio voice 32 years later, you need to be a little entertaining and you need to, you know, you need to have a little bit of entertainment with you. And I'm thinking, what's entertaining about
mine.
A jerk reading the weather who's from out of town making Baltimore inside jokes who's clearly doesn't even know where Baltimore is? Like, I'm thinking, like, that's corporate radio for you, is what that
yeah,
is.
Yeah. And your voice is perfect for like sports casting and stuff because you go up, you go way up here, you know, whereas I'm down here all the time. Ben FM up here. The Jack Radio is Ben because we live in Philadelphia and it's Ben Franklin. It's the same thing.
What's Jack for in Baltimore? Why wouldn't they call it Edgar?
I have no, I don't, I don't, I don't want to even, I don't even want to comment on your radio show with Jack.
I will let you go on that note. And I just want to say thank you. And you really, when people see and feel and hear the documentary that we've put together with Greg, they're going to hear your voice amongst other familiar voices. And
yeah.
But at least you start it and you end it. You are VOG is what you are. Voice of God in my thing. How does that make you feel? Sarcastic God, I might add, right?
All right. Well, thank you, Nestor. I'm glad I represent that to somebody.
Tell me how they can find you if they want to find you. I mean, you're a very available individual like Mr. Angelos, but like, I mean, bookings, bands, all that kind of stuff.
Well, I'm everywhere. I mean, on Instagram, I'm Kiefer Madness, KYFER. Keith Brewer on Facebook. I'm on TikTok. I mean, it's hard not to find me.
Right.
If you just write to Keith Brewer at Gmail, you'll get me.
It took me all of 30 minutes to find you. And when I found you, you were kind to me and I appreciate you coming on. I hope you have a big gig in a couple of weeks and we'll hope to see you over there. And I'm looking forward to the debut of this new Fahey Brewer, or is it Brewer Fahey Project? I don't know. We'll have to figure out what's Page Plant or Plant Page. We've had some fun this week. We've been at Costas. John Allen joined us. If you love music, John is a lifelong friend of mine. We talked about the M3 gig. I'm trying to track down Dee Snider before the end of the month so we can talk about I Want to Rock. And we're also going to be at Fadley's on Fridays with Luke Jones doing some baseball. I have the Pac-Man scratch also in the Maryland Lottery. Big thanks to our friends at Jiffy Lube Multicare, as well as Liberty Pure Solutions. Keith Brewer from the Ravens, my documentarian of sarcasm. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. I get to do this because of Pac-Man. Baltimore, positive.